Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Get peace of mind for your health insurance through It's for Women.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, my next guest's brief stint on Wall Street in the 1980s led him to write an expose of the greed and stupidity at the heart of the financial world. He's become the writer of modern capitalist culture and its greed. His books Moneyball, The Big Short and The Blind Side were made into huge Hollywood movies, really blessed with the adaptations. And his latest is a book of essays about civil servants. It doesn't sound like it might make a thrilling read, but such is the genius of Michael Lewis that it is. Welcome to studio, Michael Lewis.
Well, thank you, Oliver. Pleasure to be here.
You're in Dublin. Why are you in Dublin, first of all, can I ask?
Two reasons. My 17-year-old son is looking at Trinity College as a place to go to university. We came here through the summer, over the summer, and he fell in love with it. And I told him, you have to see an Irish winter before you decide you come here. So he's coming. He just came to see the weather, basically. and I'm getting an award from University College Dublin called the James Joyce Award.
Yes, we know it.
I'm glad you do, because no one's really explained it to me.
You know quite a lot about Ireland. We'll come to that later, because you wrote a very famous piece for Vanity Fair in 2011. Yeah. But I want to begin here because you're known for picking the zeitgeist. But you started this whole idea. It's the who is government, the untold story of public service. You started this idea before even Trump was inaugurated the first time. This was in your head.
So not quite. It was in the middle of his, a year into his first term.
Okay.
And he has electrified. You're right. Civil service, who thinks they want to read about it? Normally, it's like writing about, you know, ice melting. But Trump electrified the material. And
yeah.
What he did the first time, and there was a premonition in what's happened here then. By law in the United States, we have a 2.3 million person non-military civil service. It's mm-hmm. got to be the most complicated organization on the planet. By law, the outgoing president is required to prepare for the transition. And Obama had deputed 1,000 people to spend 6 months preparing detailed briefings of everything that went on, not just in the White House, but like the Treasury Department and the Agriculture Department. Trump had unbeknownst to Trump, he had a 600-person transition team to go in. The day after the election, he finds out about this transition team and he fires them all. And he tells the person who's head of it, Chris Christie, the former governor of New Jersey, that we're so smart, you and I can figure out the federal government in an hour. And I thought, this is great. It's high comedy. It's like, they're not going to figure out the federal government in an hour, mm-hmm. but I can go get the briefings that his people never received. And I almost arbitrarily picked the departments I went into, but one was the Energy Department,
yeah.
which they were saying they wanted to get rid of at one point. And it houses the nuclear arsenal. It manages the nuclear arsenal.
Incredible.
And I found myself getting a briefing from the people who manage the nuclear arsenal, and their tone, their attitude towards me was, it's really great that you came in to get it, because they didn't, and it's nice to be able to explain to somebody what we know. It's like what happens when the person in charge of running this vast, complicated enterprise doesn't care about it at all, just neglects it? Because that was the tone of the first administration. The tone of the second administration is very different. It's coming in with intent.
And you're celebrating these federal employees, the civil servants, the work that they do, and the individual effort that can have huge impact on people's lives.
So what I did was I talked five other writers into doing this, and I did it with them, parachuting them into the bureaucracy and said, you're all different. You all have very distinctive voices. You're all kind of famous writers. Go find a story you want to write. It took a nanosecond for each of them to find something they really cared about and produce pieces that were really interesting. And by the by, it ends up being profiles of basically heroes. That is true, with one exception. John Lanchester, one of my friends and one of the writers of this, the Englishman, he chose as his hero the consumer price index. He just wrote a long piece analyzing how complicated it was to calculate inflation and how much we depended on the integrity of the civil service to do it.
Yes.
And how basically, between the lines, how easy it would be for the president one day to wake up and say, oh, by the way, we're not calculating it that way anywhere. We're just doing it on the back of an envelope out of my office. And so we no longer have inflation.
You know, consumer price index vanishes.
That's right. You take these things for granted. You take a kind of integrity to the that process for granted. It is a you all take this for granted because you do have a permanent civil service that you don't imagine replacing with political appointees. That's what's going on in the states right now, is that Trump wants to fire at least 50,000 of these people at the top and replace them with patronage, with people with loyalists. I mean, the story I wrote, it's very narrow, but in a way ends up being very broad. You know, I grabbed out of a hat the name of a civil servant just because his profile was curious to me. It said Christopher Marx worked as a former coal miner, has solved the problem of coal mine roofs collapsing on the heads of coal miners, which took the lives of countless miners in the last 100 years. I didn't know the problem. I didn't know his existence. I didn't know that there had been a solution. 100,000 coal miners in the United States in the 20th century died, half of them from roofs falling on their heads. The market never thought to solve this problem. The coal mining companies sort of acclimated the working man to a level of risk, acculturated them to it, so that even though they had the technology to solve the problem, there was never any pressure on them to solve the problem. It was just assumed that this was a dangerous job, even though it didn't have to be as dangerous.
And didn't have the power.
And the workers didn't have the power. Mm. It took this researcher in the government to care enough about it and to attack the problem and figure out how you keep these roofs from falling on the heads of people. All the writers found these characters and these people who were doing things that wouldn't be done by the market, that are that mean life and death to ordinary citizens. And isn't it amazing that we've reached a point in our society anyway where the citizens are numb enough to what's going on that they'll allow a president to come in and try to dismantle the operation at great peril to themselves.
And he has the mandate to do it because he's doing exactly what he promised to do. I mean, he didn't hide it from the American people and they continued and went ahead and voted for it anyway.
I don't know about that. Can I push back on that a little
bit? Please do, yeah.
I don't want to argue with you on your own radio program, but so he did say he was going to appoint Elon Musk to create a Department of Government Efficiency. That's true. Beyond that, they did not elaborate what their plans were. And you could have, if you were hopeful about Elon Musk going into the federal government, the hope would have been he would have brought technologists to look at the system, at essentially the computer systems. I mean, the American government still runs on cobalt. The technology has not been upgraded. So there was a hope. My hope was that, oh, well, he knows technology. He'll do that. He doesn't know about anything else. You know, he knows that's his thing. He's really good at creating startup companies kind of thing, but that's not the same as running a big government institution. But he's walked in and he's just taken a sledgehammer to the institutions without the only rhyme or reason it seems to be not cutting expense. It's pretty wasteful what he's doing. It's consolidating Donald Trump's authority. It's like eliminating challenges to Trump's authority, while at the same time throwing some red meat at people who think that the government does, you know, like stuff for foreigners it shouldn't do, you know, that kind of thing.
It was a strange place to start.
Very strange place to start.
USAID. In terms of picking because it's easy to denigrate, isn't it, the federal employees and the big bureaucracy as the deep state and call it what it is. I like the fact that Geraldine Brooks chose the IRS, which she said, I think, was iconically hated institution because what we call it the tax man in Ireland. Nobody wants to pay taxes.
But Geraldine, it was very funny what happened. She saw Geraldine came to the Project Lake. Geraldine, great Australian-American novelist, godmother to my child. I called her up. I said, we called ourselves the Avengers. I said, I need another Avenger, Geraldine. And she said, what are people doing? And I said, well, Dave Eggers, another, he's doing the Jet Propulsion Lab, and he's looking at people who are looking at the government workers who are searching for life in outer space. She goes, that's so cheap. Everybody knows that they're valuable. She says, I'm going to pick the one that everybody hates. And so I'm going to pick the IRS. And she went to the IRS and she found this character who had essentially exposed pedophile rings and had recovered all kinds of graft and theft for taxpayers. And it was, and on top of it all, was like a black belt in karate and a dynamic character.
Yeah.
So she had, but again, she walked into the IRS and found this story in a second. You don't have to stretch it to find people in our government who are really interesting characters. And the question is why? Like, I don't know if I went in the Irish government, I would find the same thing. Maybe I would.
They probably wouldn't talk as openly as they have in this book.
Maybe. But I think there's something going on. And it's that our government has been bashed by politicians. both sides, mainly Republicans, but both sides, for 50 years. It has no real ability to defend itself. Like, civil servants know that all attention is bad attention. Civil servants know that if you stick your head up, it gets whacked off. And you just lay low and do your job. You don't get paid a lot of money. It's not glamorous work. So who ends up there? And this is what I think the book reveals. People who are very mission-driven, who find some problem they're interested in solving, that can only be solved inside the federal government. And people who are sort of purpose-driven that way, who sort of like, they're like dogs with a bone, I'm going to stop roofs from falling in on the heads of coal miners, they end up being much more interesting characters than, say, your average Wall Street banker who just wants money. It's just like they're after something really important, and this may sound like it's hyperbole and like I'm putting it too strongly. In the end, we were writing about people who'd figured out the secret to life, the secret to leading a meaningful life. All these people have incredibly meaningful lives. They're serving other people. And what's going on in our government now is people who serve themselves have taken over, and they're attacking people who serve others.
You have this theory, don't you, about billionaires, about super rich people, that there's not much meaning in their lives, and they're perhaps furious about people who have a social use in what they do.
You just put it more bluntly and better than I ever did. I don't know if that's my theory, but I do think it's true, and it's just like a lot of random encounters with rich people, that the more money they have, the more their life is about money. You would think the more money you have, the less your life has to be about money.
Problem solved.
It buys yourself free. Freedom. Look what Jeff Bezos just did. Jeff Bezos has $100-something billion, and now he's completely swiveled on whatever principles he's had and is sucking up to Donald Trump. Like, you would think he'd have enough money not to suck up to Donald Trump. But no, in fact, having that much money in some way compels you to suck up to Donald Trump. It leaves you unfree.
It makes him look less powerful, even though it looked like they had all the power. The tech bros.
It's embarrassing.
It's interesting you're saying that, because obviously he owns the Washington Post, which published these articles to begin with.
Yes, and he's a friend. I mean, I actually know him. You know, I haven't spoken to him, but I like him. I just don't understand what he's just done. I admired him building Amazon. This is incredible. I know that he that he's no fan of Donald Trump. In fact, just the opposite. So it is, and he does own the Washington Post. Now, this is where you put your finger on something kind of fun. We did this series of articles before the election. Mm-hmm. Like, I started working on this a year ago, and all these things were written without any foreknowledge that Donald Trump was going to be elected and then do what he's doing to the civil service. It's just lucky that it's incredibly timely, and we're going to sell a million books in the United States. It easily could have just come and gone as a nice series in the newspaper. But Bezos, at the time when they came out, loved them.
Really?
Love them. Like, he was relaying congratulatory notes to me through the editor. And now there are these damning indictments. Each one of these characters in the book stand as a kind of damning indictment to Elon Musk and Donald Trump. And
but at the same time, he might see them as, well, there's nothing partisan here. It's a celebration of federal employees. It's nothing pro or anti-Democrat or pro or anti-Republican party.
And he'd be right to.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump has turned him into partisan pieces, because Donald Trump has waged an attack on the civil service, across the civil service, and sort of claimed none of it. He's not pointed out to one bright spot. He's not said this is a good thing and these are good people. He said across the way, these are people who are part of a deep state. There's waste, there's fraud, there's corruption, there's abuse, and we're going to get rid of as many of them as possible. And he offered them like a blanket buyout. Come in, get out of here, and we'll pay you to leave. That's how little we think of you.
Did you look for kind of anything to do with waste in civil service? I presume every country, every civilized country in the world has a certain number of people who aren't doing anything in the civil service. And
our civil service is so watched and so monitored that I couldn't take my character out to lunch. He had to pay for his lunch. And they're all terrified of being caught, you know, getting a free lunch. So it isn't waste isn't the right. It isn't corruption that one would naturally find. What you do find is inefficiency. That, you know, and it's an inefficiency that's not the fault of the people. It's the fault of the society not paying attention to this enterprise. It's inefficiency that comes from running your computer systems on COBOL. It's inefficiency that comes from both making it really hard to hire new people and hard to fire people. So that it is. There are things that are clunky and kludgy about it, but it's not that bad. And I got to say, if you said to me, Michael, I want you to write a piece about about corruption in an enterprise, and I'm going to pick out of a jar one random federal agency and one random American private sector corporation, I would definitely go for the private. It would be easier to do it on the private sector corporation. More likely, people are stealing pencils from the and cheating on their taxes and doing things they shouldn't be doing in the private sector.
Much less regulated and looked at. In fact, even less in the last couple of weeks because a lot of corruption legislation has now been struck out.
The Trump administration is directing their attacks specifically at people who regulate private industry. So, you know, it's like the referees are being cleared from the field.
The article I mentioned at the beginning, which was for Vanity Fair in 2011, you came here, had a look at the absolute chaos going on.
It was so much fun.
By the way, rereading this whole thing over the weekend.
I've never read it. I wrote it.
It was very triggering. Very triggering, I think, for any Irish
person. So tell me, you're going to have to help me a little bit.
Well, I think the summary of your article is you come and you realise, well, Ireland kind of went mad for a while. These banks went completely rogue, borrowed insane amounts of money, mostly from Germany and some trust funds.
Put it into commercial real estate.
Bought the country from each other.
Yeah.
But what you were amazed by in the article is the fact that we had just guaranteed all the bondholders, which we said we legally had to do. Wasn't true, as you pointed out. They said it was for Irish bondholders. That wasn't true either. But the crux of it is that you're astonished about the lack of protest in Ireland at the time as we emigrated.
That's true.
Out of the place.
That was true. In a funny way, it seems to have done you well. Your willingness to suffer. It's almost like we had this coming to us. We have to pay the price now. We're reverting back to miserable, poor Ireland, and we can just suck it up and gut through it. And apparently you have. When I come here, both before the financial crisis and in the last few years to Dublin, the thing that pops in my mind, this is going to sound strange, but the Boston Red Sox baseball team, large Irish fan base, but the Boston Red Sox, for the longest time, was the losing baseball team. It had this curse on it. For 100 years, it couldn't win a World Series. Yeah. And people complained and they bitched and they moaned and it was horrible being a Red Sox fan. But nothing was so horrible as after when they finally won the World Series and the people didn't know what to do with happiness. They had put all of their misery into the Boston Red Sox and it gave them an excuse for why they were unhappy. And once you won, you didn't have the excuse. I feel a little bit here that way that like, oh my God, you're the richest city in Europe right now. It feels that way. It feels unbelievable.
On paper, at least.
And I assume that your therapy bills are going through the roof because previously you had good reasons for being unhappy. Now you have none. But on the other hand, it does seem happier.
That is pretty much what you're saying in that article from 2011, which was that we went from poverty to wealth so quickly. We'd know in between, like the Germans, you know, got time to sit around and consider the world. We didn't. And then we went straight to
And you've come
pain.
Right back to it.
Yeah. I suppose when we say we suffered, you could say that the people who made the decisions, they got their lump sums and their pensions and enjoyed them since if they've survived. And there was very little punishment for those who really fanned the flames of what was the pain.
But for me, I wasn't picking on Ireland. It was one insight, and it's a crude insight, but that led me to come here. I had written The Big Short about the American financial crisis. But, you know, you look up and you could see this wasn't just an American, it was a global phenomenon, but that it was different from country to country. A bit like COVID was different from country to country.
Yeah.
I could have done the same thing with COVID, and I wished I had. And that, you know, essentially the root cause was the same as with COVID, that countries were left alone in a dark room with a giant pile of money, and they were allowed to do whatever they wanted with it. And people had the different kinks, right?
Yeah.
So one country's yum was another country's yuck.
Yeah.
And the Greeks inflated their state. The Iceland decided they wanted to have the three biggest banks in the world and that they were massively ingenious traders of financial instruments and Vikings were born to be, you know, investment bankers kind of thing. And Ireland had its own thing. And so it was more, what does the event reveal about the society?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I was just looking for different sort of experiences. And Ireland was just a stop on the way. Our world, as you cross borders, looks more and more the same. The shops are the same. The food's the same. It's less of a distinctive experience, but you can see that it's distinctive in the culture when these traumas strike. And so that's what interested me. And I came for 2 weeks and I wrote the article. And
it was incredible.
If
you're only here for 2 weeks, you've got quite an insight. Looking back at it now, it's extraordinary.
Well, I don't know how it reads. I might look like a fool.
It's absolutely perfect. And you might be surprised to learn, because you also write about the reaction in Iceland and Greece, where they toss out their governments pretty much straight away. Even the banks are collapsed, and they start a whole new political spectrum, basically. But in Ireland, you would like to hear that the same party that caused the mess of the place are in power right now.
There we go. So that's more like us. We didn't even collapse our banks. We didn't do anything that way. And that, you know, if you want to understand Trumpism, the anger. Trump
is
about
the anger is still there.
The anger is still there. And the anger goes right back to that.
Should we be frightened in Ireland about our tax take, because we're reliant on American companies? We talk about big tech a lot, but it's mostly pharmaceutical in terms of what makes us the money.
Should you worry about Donald Trump coming and trying to change your taxes?
Yeah.
Of course you should be worried, because he seems to just have a nose for causing trouble. And he's got a nose for any time he senses the Americans are getting somehow a raw deal. That tax money should be our money, kind of thing. However, if you play your cards right, you'll be fine. Lay low. Don't say anything nasty about Donald Trump. Suck up to him when you see him. Send your prime minister over to flatter him.
Oh, we're all about this already.
If you can do that, if you can suck up, if I can hear the sounds of you sucking up from my office in Berkeley, I think you'll be fine. He's going to talk about it, but he might not do anything about it. You are not an obvious target.
We're not high on the list of grievances.
And also, a lot of the thugs around him are Irish. You know, that his posse has got, it's a lot of Irish America.
This is the Irish America we don't talk about here.
You don't?
Joe Biden was Irish, but nobody in the Trump administration.
This just occurred to me. Should we be blaming you?
Exactly, yes.
Should we be blaming you? I it's possible we should be blaming you. But I think...
all those Bannons, they're gone. They have no influence anymore. I mean, this other Irish name, that was the first administration.
Yeah, so I just think if you lay low, the storm might just pass. And you have friends, right? Presumably the Irish Americans are your friends.
Absolutely. And it's waning. That influence is waning. I mean, Joe Biden does feel like he's going to be the last of the connected Irish American presidents.
Mm-hmm.
There are fewer and fewer, and maybe we're... But of course, things change as much as they say the same. The opposition in America is quite silent and effete so far, not very effective.
This is a really interesting observation. I mean, I'm not... We should say that I'm like a C-minus political pundit. I don't go on that you're talking to the wrong person to get a fluid answer and a fluid analysis of American politics. I'm just a citizen who happens to write stories. However, what's been interesting to me is Trump has come in and so traumatically disrupted the government. He didn't say he was going to do these things. He's just doing them. And every day there's a fresh outrage to which everybody pays attention. And then the next day they move on to the next outrage. The Democrats were unprepared, clearly, but they don't have the words. They haven't figured out what the words are. What do you say in response, aside from he's breaking the law every day, which is they do say. And I think there's a reason they don't have the words, because the words require you to make a full-throated defense of government, a full-throated defense of the civil service. And they have shied away from that for decades, because it's never been winning on the campaign trail. It's like the playbook is Republicans bash government and say they're going to eliminate agencies and say the civil service is the deep state and so on and so forth. And the Democrats just kind of move on to the next subject. They don't agree with them, but they've never been in the position of having to defend the society.
Yeah.
Defend, and this the government is the society.
That's a campaign they need to do.
They need to learn how to do it.
Repeat it.
Need to learn how to do it. And I had a call, and I could tell you this, that how thin the bench is on this subject, because I'm just a writer, right? I'm not an expert on American government. I've written a couple of books in the American government, but you look at my output. It's about psychologists and money and baseball and football and I'm all over the place.
Yeah.
I'm not the person to be the voice of this. But I had a call from a congressional committee 2 weeks ago saying, would you please come in and be our expert about the importance of the civil service? This is from the Democrats.
Yeah.
And my reaction was, you're calling me? Like, this is a bad sign that there are so many people who should be voicing this, making this argument. And the Democrats should have long ago seeded in the American mind the importance of having a government. Government is just not, it's not people just laying around being lazy. That these functions the government does, taking care of the nuclear weapons, raising, collecting taxes, running the treasury and deciding how to manage the debt.
Saving rural America.
Saving rural America.
That are in this book.
It's one thing after another. That those functions should have been explained and sold to the American people, and they have not been. So that, I think that's why they've been in this defensive crouch for so long on this subject that they have not, they don't have the words yet. But someone, some leader, some younger leader is going to rise up and have the words at some point.
I presume. That's your prediction, because you're usually ahead of the posse.
I do. I don't know who the person is. And it won't be, and when, but when they emerge, it'll be very obvious. They'll become the leader of the Democratic Party.
What other kind of thing you can pluck from the ether around the world should we be looking at to happen next? Because cryptocurrency, you were ahead of. You're ahead of, you know, the people who predicted the crash. You were chatting to them before anybody else, including here in Ireland. By the way, that guy Morgan Kelly still hasn't done an interview since then.
Oh, really?
I think you scared him off. But anyway,
I loved him. What loved him.
Yeah, he's brilliant. What should we be looking out for now?
All right, I'll take a stab at this. But though again, I don't think I predict the future. I just pay more attention to what's under my nose. I think that's the way you predict the future. You look under your nose and what's there, and if you just pay attention to it, it'll tell you where we're going. So Donald Trump won. I was waiting for something that happened that didn't happen. I was waiting for the debt to become more of an issue. America's debt, yeah. Deficits are getting bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. We're about to cross the peak reached in World War II in our indebtedness. No voice at all for constraining this in the political system. And Donald Trump is going to cut taxes and he's going to make the problem worse.
Yeah.
So I waited in Donald Trump won for him to get up at some rally in Alabama and say, people say we're in debt. We're not in debt. Who do we owe this money to? We owe it to the Chinese. How did they get it? They stole it from us, an unfair trade deal.
We're not going to pay it.
We're not going to pay it. I waited for that. Didn't happen, but I thought if it happens, it's the beginning of a different kind of financial crisis. The first financial crisis we were all able to dig our way out of because there was a parent in the room called the government. The government come in, the banks behave badly. The government could say we can actually insure all this risk. Everybody can calm down. When the government is no longer the parent, when the government is a toddler, and there's nothing above the government or bigger than the government, you've got a different sort of problem. So I would point to you. Last week, Donald Trump said, these treasury bonds, I've been looking at them. They're not all the same. Some of them are a little squirrely. They don't look real to me.
The doubt is being
created.
Already.
Watch this. What will happen is people will go, oh my God, this is a guy who bankrupted six companies, who has spent his life walking away from debts. Maybe this is why they elected him.
It would make sense. And watch, I mean, that's world chaos.
It's right? World chaos. Yeah. I mean, he'll try to reel it back in if the stock markets collapse.
But yes,
as he does. I think you could cause a lot of trouble there.
Well, thank you for being such a comfort.
There we
to
go.
Talk to
I'm glad. I hope I warmed up your cheered up your morning.
Look, I love that you are moved by these people, these unsung heroes, which are now finally sung in your book, Who is Government? The Untold Story of Public Service, edited by Michael Lewis. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Enjoy the rest of your stay here.